What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Hi guys, welcome to the Katie Halper Show. I'm your host, Katie Halper, and of course I'm joined by
Gabe Pacheco.
You can find the Katie Halper Show every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on WBAI, that's 99.5 FM, WBAI.org, on iTunes. And you know what you should do while you're there? You just do a little R&R, a little rate and review. Drop us some stars. We love it. You can find us on SoundCloud. You can find us on Patreon. The great thing about Patreon is that you get bonus content, you get extra interviews, you get extended interviews, you get a little behind the scenes. And to do that, you just go to patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. Again, that's patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. You can find us on Twitter using the hashtag KTHelpShow. That's letter K, letter T, H-A-L-P-S, H-O-W. You can find me at KTHelps, letter K, letter T, H-A-L-P-S. And you can find Gabe at Gabe_Pacheco.
That's right.
That's right. How's it going, Gabe?
I'm feeling great. You know, a little sore. Went for a run today.
Nice. How was it? In this weather? Were you so hot?
I was just sweating bullets.
Schwitzing balls. Left and right.
Uh-huh. But yeah, I feel, I was just flushing the system.
Yeah, the toxins.
Yeah, that's right. You got to do it.
You got to get rid of that.
Self-care, baby.
Self-care.
That's right.
You know, I'm not at the point of radical self-care yet. I'm like at reformist self-care.
I hear you.
Right?
Like some centrist self-care.
Because I've never really embraced that before, because I find like so many people who practice radical self-care are just being terrible people.
Narcissists. Navel-gazing.
Yes. Navel-gazing, exactly. It's navel-gazing under the guise of social justice, basically. Right?
For the self,
yeah. But I have been trying to, I need listeners to be my accountability buddies. Or Gabe, you want to be an accountability buddy?
I'll be an accountability buddy.
All right. Accountability buddy. That's right. I need to.
What do you got? What's something you want to text me that you did every day?
Workout.
To check in.
I want to work out every day.
Every day?
Just something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gabe's eyes just bulged out of his cranium as if I'm not the spitting image of health and fitness.
I'm on a diet this week.
Really? What kind?
It's a media diet.
Ooh, a Myot. Okay, tell us about
it. That's right. So no podcasts, no TV, no books, no reading.
Oh my gosh.
You know, I know it sounds like I'm making myself more ignorant, but I can find out about the news. I got to ask people.
Right.
I got to be like, hey, turn to somebody on the A train on my way up here. Hey, what's going on?
Hey, stranger.
Yeah. Tell me three things that you think are important that I should know in the news.
And you know so much, though. You can like burn. It's like fat. It's like you don't have a lot of body fat, but it's almost like for you, you have a lot of.
I got a lot of useless little
information,
tidbits.
So you can burn it off. You don't need to be consuming information constantly because you got so much in there.
Yeah. And you know what has happened so far this week is that I've ended up texting more friends, returning more emails. So wow. I'm just more in correspondence. Take a diet, guys. In that time off, you might, you have so much extra time on your hands. You could just I've started doodling.
You're a very good artist.
Thank you. Yeah. We'll put some of the art up.
Yes. Let's do it. We'll put it up on Patreon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Let's do it. We'll do some free previews and then.
Speaking of fitness.
Yeah. What are we doing today?
What are we talking about?
We are talking about the World Cup, which is coming up. And, you know, Gabe and I had a long talk and we decided that we probably shouldn't be the ones responsible for a chat on the World Cup, given that neither of us plays nor watches soccer.
I'm not ESPN. I don't know anything about soccer.
Me neither.
I'll tell you, I mean, here, this is the one thing I do know is that I've seen it live a couple times in Latin America. I've seen it. I went to a game in Mexico, went to a game in Chile. People went crazy in the stadium. And I thought I was staring at a screensaver. It was so boring to me.
A screensaver of handsome, fit men running up and down a
It was like a never-ending game of Pong. And then every once in a while, people would fall down. And then they'd overact, like they hurt themselves.
Oh, my gosh.
Until somebody got a card. And then they'd hop back up on their feet and do a little pirouette.
I thought you meant card, like a sympathy card. I was like, that's so fast to get a card. I'm not even kidding.
They get the refs just throw handkerchiefs out on the field, you know, to let the other team know that they did something wrong. The stakes need to be higher. Like, you know, when Escobar was sponsoring one of the teams, or when the Iraq, when their team was playing, I knew that something bad was going to happen to them if they lost.
Right. I get, you know? So there's real commitment there. That's really playing under pressure.
I like a blood sport.
Yeah.
I like to know that the stakes are high and that somebody might get turned into a steak if they don't succeed.
I like it. Oh God. What was that? There's that Colombian soccer player who scored a goal against his own team and was killed.
Yeah.
Now that's some pressure. If you don't face that, then are you really an athlete at the end of the day?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want anybody to die for real.
No.
You know?
But there's nothing wrong with thinking that could happen. It probably makes you a better player.
I want the players to feel.
Right, exactly.
Like they're guns to their backs.
Right.
And they got to put it all in 100%.
Is there anything wrong with that? No.
No.
So I like soccer because I think that baseball and football are like painfully boring. Also, they're not, I'm just going to be a little objectifying. I don't find like baseball players or football players very attractive. I mean, to be fair, part of it's the outfit. I don't find them very attractive. I do like basketball players and soccer players. I like the outfits and I like the way they look. They tend to be better looking. And also, there's just more fit, like more motion and movement.
Feels like a full body workout.
Full body workout, right? Exactly.
Yeah, football. You're just like, you practice sprinting and then hitting something really hard.
Yeah, and you get brain damage.
Short bursts followed by CTE. Yeah, that's brain damage.
Yeah. Also, boxing I don't like. Although I've kind of seen whenever I see movies about boxing, I'm like disturbed by how much I like it.
I love the training montages.
Such good training montages. So great.
Yeah. The training, boxing, I think is great training if you just never have to get hit.
Yeah, exactly.
People build themselves up to be perfect, sculpted Adonises than to immediately get deflated in the ring.
It's really terrible.
Yeah.
So we decided to call in a special guest for this episode. And I sat down, I chatted with Nando Villa.
Oh, he tapped me out. You're going to talk to Nando about this. Great.
Yeah, I tapped you out. Tapped myself out, but took one for the team, so to speak, mixing all these metaphors. Sat down and spoke to Nando about this. Nando Villa, who is the host of a very successful podcast called We Came to Win. It's one of the top five most popular podcasts out there on iTunes about sports. Just under the Katie Halper Show, We Came to Lose podcast that is yet to break into the top 17,000. But we're hoping to do that. And that, of course, is about...
we talk about all the second tier. Yeah, there's some badminton.
Badminton, yeah. It's a badminton podcast. Really niche.
Foosball.
We have a couple episodes on foosball, but let's just be real. It's all badminton all
competitive hacky sacking.
But yeah, I did go to Wesleyan, so that's probably the...
You guys had an ultimate frisbee
ultimate
team.
Frisbee, are you kidding? Of course, yeah. To hear the rest of my interview with Nando, and it's really good. We talk about Spanish politics, and we talk about some romance that I had with a Spanish soccer player. No joke.
I had some romance with some jamón serrano, right? Like jamón ibérico?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Not in
thin sliced salty meats.
Yeah, that's how I think of my Spanish men.
I love a tapas.
I do like tapas. Actually, I don't eat red meat. So in Spain, all I eat is tortilla española. That's like all I eat. Spanish omelet. But it's like, it's only good when you put onions in it. If you don't put onions in it, don't even come. Don't talk to me. I won't eat your tortilla española. That sounds weird. It's like I have to say like tortilla. How do you casually say... Like, it sounds pretentious to be like, I'd like some guacamole. But right. it also sounds weird to be like, oh, did you see Y Tu Mamá También? Like, that sounds weird. I'll be like, yeah. Did you see Y Tu Mamá También? Yeah, we should go see it. Then we can have some guacamole. Like, that's how I'll do it.
Right.
So, tortilla española. Am I supposed to be like tortilla española?
It's case by case. You
case
gotta,
by case. Yeah. Caso por caso. When I was studying in Spain, there was a guy who would always say España instead of España.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it ends when they have the ñ, when they have that tilde over it, it's ña. And my friend and I were talking to him, and we realized afterwards, he's an American guy, and my American friend and I were like, he always says España, Español. Wow, that could get really awkward, because he also must say ano instead of año, yeah. which means anus instead of year.
That's right.
And so we started thinking about all the ways that would come out, like happy new anus, like how many anuses do you have? Because the way they ask in Spanish, how old are you, is how many years do you have?
Yeah.
Wasn't that an anus to remember? What anus was that again?
That was my gap anus.
What else can we do? During the Franco anuses.
That's right.
During the anuses of Franco, what else?
My golden anuses.
The golden anuses. Anyway, when I had 20 anuses, I had no idea how good I had it. Oh, God, yeah. So that was a good time.
Really excited to be talking to our special guest, Nando Villa. Nando is the host of a great new podcast called We Came to Win. And I'm smiling because I don't follow sports that much, but that's how good it is. I actually listen to it. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Sure, of course. Thanks for coming. Tell us about this new podcast. It was one of the top sports podcasts on iTunes.
At one point, yeah.
At one time, yeah.
Yeah.
You see what going on the Katie Halper Show can do for one's career? That, also redeem
the
yourself.
Bump.
The Katie Halper Show bump, exactly, yeah.
Well, it's about the World Cup. It's sort of stories about World Cup history. Some of the moments are very famous and people know them. Some of them are not so famous. But what we do is we sort of go behind the story and tell, interesting things about it. We do a little bit of like an oral history type thing. Stories like how the England run in 1990 helped turn around English soccer, which was really in the dumps at one point. And now it's this big spectacle that we know today. Or in 1986, Diego Maradona had one of the most famous World Cup performances ever against England, in which he scored two goals in a span of 4 minutes, one of them with his hand, and the other one considered the greatest goal of all time.
With his head or something? Left foot, okay. Yeah. My left foot inspired that movie.
Yes.
Not true.
No.
So can you tell us a little bit about what people can look for at the World Cup that's upcoming?
Well, I'm quite excited about this tournament. I don't know, I guess I get excited about every single one, but the last one was a little bit of a disappointment in that there was not a lot of great gameplay in Brazil in 2014. And I was there. I was there. I was doing a live show every night from the Copacabana Beach in Rio de Janeiro.
Oh, my God.
And even though I had that cool job, I still thought the World Cup was kind of boring.
Wow.
But this one, I think, is going to be great. I think it's going to be wide open. There's a lot of very good teams and a lot of very good players. And I just think that the way soccer has evolved in the past few years, it's going to be a lot more open, a lot more goals. So I'm excited about that.
Open means what?
Open means like not as conservative in their style of play. Like playing not to lose versus playing to win. You know, playing not to concede goals rather than going after as many goals as you can.
So like on the offensive as opposed to on the defensive?
Yes, yes, yes.
See how good I am about sports metaphors?
Yeah.
And where is the World Cup this year?
It's in Russia. Trump and Putin negotiated
it. Are they going to kiss on the soccer
field? They're going to make out.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is all the libs on Twitter are very like, you know, they're dropping the snide comments about the World Cup.
Right.
You know, being in Russia. So.
So before we get back into the World Cup of today, can you tell us a little bit about the history of the World Cup?
Wow. The history of the World Cup. Well, the World Cup goes back to basically 1930, and it started off as a relatively small tournament, but it has since become the biggest sports tournament in the world. In terms of audience, in terms of interest, in terms of repercussion and money and everything. It's just, it's every 4 years and it's massive. Billions of people watch. The hearts and minds of entire nations hang in the balance as countries compete against each other. And the first episode was how England's run in the 1990 World Cup really turned English soccer around. You know, in the 1980s, we think of English soccer as, you know, the most powerful league in the world. It's one of the most popular leagues in any sport in the world. It's got millions of fans all over, like all over the place, from India to the United States to Africa, everywhere. People are fans of English soccer. It's the most richest and most powerful league. But not that long ago, it was actually considered one of the worst leagues in Europe. It was just in the dumps in the 1980s. It was these crumbling old stadiums that were built 100 years earlier. There was a lot of violence in the fans, known as hooliganism, which I'm sure you've heard of. And then the gameplay was really bad, and they were actually banned from competing in European tournaments for 5 years because in the 1985 European Cup final, there was an incident where a few fans were killed in Heysel. It was a game between Liverpool and Juventus. So they were banned for 5 years from European competitions. Everyone thought it was just like awful. It wasn't fashionable anymore. And it was seen in the 1980s in England as this sort of like scummy working class sport, you know, and in the culture in England in the 1980s was, you know, Thatcherism. Right. It was like very much
Prime general. Minister Margaret Thatcher for the young viewers
yeah,
out there.
For the kids. We remember her. Yeah. Old Maggie.
Yeah. Iron Lady.
The Iron Lady. Yeah.
Major conservative.
One of the great debates of our time is about how much of your money should be spent by the state and how much you should keep to spend on your family.
Right wing, yeah, right neoliberal, wing. Neoliberal, yeah. Neocon.
Basically the equivenant of their Reagan.
Right, yeah,
it's their Reagan. Yeah.
There is no such thing as public money.
They really transformed the country from a sort of pretty left-wing place to a pretty right-wing place.
But someone has to add up the figures.
She was not a fan of soccer.
She was not a fan of soccer.
No. No, no.
She really hated soccer. She thought soccer was for the gross, disgusting
masses. Plebs.
The plebs. And so she did everything she can to go against soccer. I mean, she even threatened to pull England out of the 1990 World Cup. This was like a serious, credible thing that they considered in the government. You can imagine today that would be unthinkable. But this was an actual thing that they were considering. But England went on a run in that tournament. They got to the semifinal. No one expected it. They completely outperformed expectations, and it really captured the imagination of the nation and the imagination nation. And it really sort of got people back into soccer in a big way. It was like the turning point, which led to what English soccer is today with the Premier League. A lot of pomp and circumstance and spectacle. But that was really the turning point, was that 1990 World Cup in Italy.
And can you talk about the class politics involved in that?
Yeah, I mean, in England back then, contrary to what it is today, you go to like a soccer stadium in England, in the Arsenal Stadium, for example, in London, and it's like it's a pretty corporate bourgeois affair, if that makes sense. But back then it was not. It was pretty like a rough kind of working class thing to do. I mean, there was no seats at the stadiums, or there were some seats, but there was entire sections that were standing room only. So you'd be standing there, just like with a bunch of dudes, crowded in there like sardines, and all eating like fried onions and fish and chips, and drinking this thing called Bovril, which is like a meat juice.
We tried to get some for today, but we didn't find any.
Yeah, but yeah, it was literally like a meat extract in juice form. It's disgusting sounding.
The Brits have really bad food. No
they
offense.
Have very bad food, and you know because they were in these standing room area seats, it was very difficult to move around. So if you had to take a piss, people would just piss, and so like in the middle of the game, you'd just be standing in flowing piss on the floor. It was a pretty disgusting thing. So no like uppity posh people went to the games.
As they say there, right?
Yes.
What were the sports for the posh people?
Rugby was considered a more gentleman's sport. Yeah, because it's a rough. So it was like there's a famous phrase in England that's something like rugby is a ruffian sport or something played by gentlemen.
Okay.
And soccer is a gentleman's sport played by ruffians.
Oh, interesting.
You know, because soccer is a much more dainty sport compared to rugby. But and things like crew and tennis and. Fox hunting.
Badminton.
Fox hunting.
Right, fox hunting. Yeah. It's good sport.
Things like that. Motor racing is they're big into that in the UK. There was a difference. There was a very much like soccer was seen as like a kind of grimy thing that you just didn't touch if you were, a person of good repute.
Right.
And so that was really like the context of how this story changed. You know, like really it became kind of a much more acceptable sport to all the classes after that World Cup. And now soccer really is like the universal sport. It is the number one sport by far in the world and in England and everywhere else, except for the United States.
And can you talk about the deaths that happened and how it was blamed on hooliganism as opposed to kind of the structure,
right.
So, physical structure of the stadium?
So we did, in the episode, we talk about a very famous incident called the Hillsborough incident, which was a game that Liverpool played, a semifinal of something called the FA Cup. And it was played in a stadium called Hillsborough. And it was a very old stadium. Definitely had not been, properly, sort of, they didn't think about, like, these, like, mass movements of people coming into the stadium in a very sophisticated way. So what happened was, there was a lot of Liverpool fans that day, and they were kind of funneled into this one area improperly. And they all kind of started pushing into the same pen. They called it a pen. It was like basically like a large outdoor cage that they were stuck in, and it was standing room only. And it started getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And over time, a crush started to happen, and people like just couldn't get out. There were people literally climbing on top of each other and just like kind of crowd surfing, like as if they were at a rock concert. People like climbing over the fence because they would put these giant fences to protect the players from fans rushing onto the field, which would happen sometimes. So they were climbing over the fence. The cops were just like beating them back in because they had no idea how bad it was inside the pen. And people were literally getting crushed to death. And until they finally realized how bad it was and they released the cage, they stopped the game and released the cage, and people started running out, like 96 people just kind of collapsed because they were dead.
That's insane.
And you can imagine what it must be like to go to a sporting event these days and have 96 people die in a crowd crush. So this was like the low point of English soccer. This was considered the absolute low point. And immediately after, a right-wing tabloid called The Sun, which is owned by, and still is owned, I think, by Rupert Murdoch.
And we have one
friend
here,
the
Sun. Friend of the show. Rupert,
the show,
come on
Rupert
the show.
Murdoch.
Go on Katie Halper Show.
Yeah. Friend of the show, Rupert Murdoch, obviously the king of the right-wing tabloid, yellow press,
right,
all over the world, ran a series of articles, one famous headline that just said the truth, and it sort of blamed the incident on the actual fans that were there, said that they're so violent and they're so disgusting that they would do these things that would kill 96 people, and they told stories of fans pissing on dead, like on corpses, of like stealing, you know, pickpocketing them while they were dead, of like yelling and throwing stuff at cops. The bobbies. And a lot of people in England bought it. You know, a lot of people, the right-wing press in England is very powerful. And a lot of people bought it. Like, that was the narrative. The narrative was that these fans were out of control and that's why all these people died. Turns out it was all a lie. And really what it came down to was the stadium, which is rickety and old, and it was not equipped at all to handle that kind of crowd movement. The cops had no idea what they were doing. They had no idea how to funnel the people in properly. Because if you evenly distributed them,
right,
it would be fine. But they were all just being pushed into this one area. And there was a decades-long inquiry into this incident. And it's finally been sort of resolved. And the fans have been completely exonerated. Like and there was like a huge police cover-up. And it's like all this crazy thing that happened. But that was seen as like the low point. I mean, like that incident really freaked the world out to like the English fans, especially because the very English media was the one sort of perpetrating this narrative.
Right. It wasn't the foreign press.
No, it wasn't. Right. Yeah. It was the press at home.
That created it. Yeah. The narrative, at least. Yeah.
So, that just reinforced the idea that soccer fans were just, and by extension, working class people were just disgusting, violent, you know, basically mongrels.
Right.
Yeah, it
seems like, I mean, I think sports often are kind of a microcosm of larger societal issues. So it reminds me of how, you know, in England, that building collapsed. In London, Grenfell Tower,
yeah.
Right, exactly. And there's this narrative of kind of culture of poverty, right? Like, what's wrong with these people that they're living in places like this? Why can't they take care of their spaces? As opposed to, they're very, like, concrete structural issues that have to do with permits and cutting corners and people trying to, you know, basically, just people being okay with people dying for financial gain.
Yeah. Totally. Even like So like even not this World Cup coming up in 2018 in Russia this year, the next one is in 2022 in Qatar.
Qatar. Now I'm gonna have to have a guest from Qatar to tell us how to pronounce it. It's a hard one. It's not easy. It's like an overcompensating thing. Like people who don't speak Spanish are like Chavez. It's really Chavez. Yeah, so this is like a thing. It is Qatar, but we're like Qatar.
Anyway. Yeah, exactly. You know.
Yeah.
Well, Qatar does not have a huge and sophisticated soccer infrastructure. Mm. They just don't. So they have to build all these stadiums to be able to host the World Cup. And what they've been doing is basically conning poor Nepalese workers to come to Qatar.
Right.
And then what they do is they revoke their exit visas when they get there. So they basically become slaves. And I mean, some reports have indicated at least 1,000 people have died building the stadiums because they put them in these awful conditions. In like the hot sun and like, you know, it's not like a temperate climate over there.
Right.
I mean, it's so hot that they've actually had to reschedule the World Cup and move it to the winter time because the players just can't play in summer there. It's too hot. But these people are still building the stadiums in those conditions and they're living in shanty towns near the work sites and they're just dying. And this is all just like for our, you know,
entertainment,
you know, and we're all just kind of suckers for it. I mean, what are we going to do? Like boycott? I mean, it's hard, you know, like.
Well, what can we? Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, how much can fans and players use their purchasing power or their playing power to both expose what's happening and also kind of force governments to do certain things or businesses to do certain things?
The sad thing is that there's a similar thing happening that happens in Washington, where is that like very high paid lobbyists from Qatar basically buy off players. So the way like the UAE or Saudi Arabia will, you know, pay off like some think tank dude to write an op-ed in the Washington Post talking about like how awesome Saudi Arabia is now. What the Qatari government is doing is they pay a lot of money to basically former players who are like superstars and beloved by fans, and they bring them there and they show them the facilities and how cool they are.
And not the Nepalese.
No, they don't show them that part. Yeah, they don't show them that part. But they basically show them like the training facilities and how they're developing the local league, and then they hire them as consultants and sometimes like they'll hire them as like, you know, assistant coaches for their national team or whatever. And these players then become ambassadors for the cause of the Qatari World Cup. It's a very similar thing to what's happening, to what happens in Washington, right?
Mm-hmm. So the lobbying.
Yeah, the lobbying. What can fans do? I mean, it's hard. I mean, like asking fans to boycott the World Cup, I think is like, you know, it's hard. There has been some movement on the sponsorship front. Like, I mean, there was rumors that, and there was some movement in the sense that, like, you know, some sponsors were getting skittish about supporting this World Cup, but it didn't really materialize.
In Russia or in Qatar?
Qatar. Yeah, Qatar. But, I mean, what can fans do? I mean, it's tough. I mean,
or players?
I think it has to be players. I mean, we ask for players. They're just athletes. They're all.
Yeah, but look at Colin Kaepernick and stuff.
Yes, Colin Kaepernick is incredibly big. But Colin Kaepernick, it's because it's a cause that affects him.
This stand wasn't for me. This stand wasn't because I feel like I'm being put down in any kind of way. This is because I'm seeing things happen to people that don't have a voice.
There's a lot of things that need to change. One specifically is police brutality. There's people being murdered unjustly and not being held accountable. Cops are getting paid leave for killing people.
The cause of Nepalese workers is...
Right.
You know,
we're, of course, referring to... I mean, I guess everyone knows this.
Yeah, Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, the football player.
Another example of what you just said about how sport... Like, the fights in the sporting arena reflect our broader culture and politics. I mean, think about, like, I mean, is there anything that encapsulates what's going on in America today than the culture war around Colin Kaepernick?
Right.
You know, everything about it, you know, like you know, from like the snowflakey safe space response from the right that want, like, you know, they can't handle a guy like, you know, triggering them.
Right.
To like the fact that these billionaire owners are like closing ranks and collaborating with the extreme right wing to suppress this. I mean, that's the kind of thing that happens all over the place.
Yeah, and he's spoken out. I mean, it's not just this symbolic thing, right? But he's actually said, he's really spoken out against not just police brutality, but like the two-party system.
Oh, yeah. No. He's actually, you know, he's doing the work, so to speak.
Come on the show. Come on the Young Turks.
Friend of the
come
show,
on the
Katie
Hill for show. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do a debate between Colin Kaepernick and Rupert Murdoch.
Exactly.
That'd be.
And Colin Kaepernick will totally win, and then the media that Rupert Murdoch owns will pretend that
right.
he lost the debate. So we have like Kaepernick. We have Muhammad Ali, who famously said that yeah. no Viet Cong ever called him the N-word, meaning no. Yeah. No Vietnamese communist ever called him the N-word.
My conscience won't let me go shoot my brother or some darker people or some poor hungry people in the mud for big powerful America and shoot them for what? They never called me nigger. They never lynched me. They never put no dogs on me. They never robbed me of my nationality.
He went to jail.
How can I shoot them poor people? Just take me to jail.
For refusing to go to Vietnam despite yeah. the draft.
My name is a white people, not Viet Cong or Chinese or Japanese. You my opposer when I want freedom. You my opposer when I want justice. You my opposer when I want equality. You won't even stand up for me in America for my religious beliefs, and you want me to go somewhere and fight, but you won't even stand up for me here at home.
You have the Black Panther salute, fist.
Yeah.
That happened at the Olympics mm-hmm. in Mexico City.
Yeah.
Is that right? You have the Jesse Owens with yeah. Adolf Hitler. So there is a kind of tradition of athletes who are politically engaged. I guess you're right when you, I mean, it's a really good point, which is that these are issues that directly affect them.
Yeah, one pretty famous example that—
Or the nation, at least.
That was, there was a really famous forward for Liverpool named Robbie Fowler, who scored a ton of goals. He was like their big goal scorer, big star. He was, Liverpool supporters are traditionally very kind of like working class and pretty left wing, militant. You know, Liverpool in general was like the heart of a lot of the trade union movement in the UK, especially around the docks and all that stuff.
Right.
Well, while he was a player in Liverpool, he scored a famous goal in which he like ran over to the camera and lifted up his shirt, and underneath he had a shirt with a message of solidarity for striking dock workers
wow.
in Liverpool. That was like a very highly contentious one. You see it every once in a while. It happens. I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo has done a lot of activism work around Palestine in the past. He's given a lot of money and you know done some awareness. But you don't, and you've seen it. You see it every once in a while. I mean, a lot of the Barcelona players have been very active about the famous procés in the Catalan independence movement,
right.
or at least the right to for self-determination. It means the proceso in Spanish, but it's in Catalan. It's el procés. It's what the thing is called now.
Right.
It's like the process towards independence.
Right. Okay, so we have something happening right now with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and messy. Can you talk about that? It's gotten kind of messy.
It's gotten a little messy, yeah. So before the World Cup, teams schedule friendlies with other teams to prepare, basically, because they don't get to play a lot. So they need
practice.
So they do these essentially like exhibition games. And the Argentine Football Federation had scheduled a friendly with Israel, probably scheduled it maybe a year ago, well, who knows. But they don't schedule it right away.
Right.
These things are known for months.
They had no idea Israel was oppressing Palestinians.
That's true. Well, I'm sure they...
Back yeah, then, just yeah. kidding, yeah.
Well, but then the situation
course.
Got, you
Even
know,
more
a little,
I mean, it's,
a little
it,
heated.
Right,
yeah.
It's more, like, problematic. It's more difficult to kind of sanction or normalize Israel now. They've been oppressing Palestinians for a while, but yes, the recent events of Gaza have been like so over the top
yeah.
and indefensible, even just on an optics level.
Right.
So
people on social media and stuff started a campaign to get Argentina to cancel this friendly. I mean, you know, they're saying like, why would you go into Israel? It's kind of like what's happening with like a lot of the artists.
Performers
who... And the Argentine players, actually, a lot of them started receiving death threats.
You spoiled that. Spoiler alert. That's what's motivating
yeah, so
them
they,
more than the politics, right?
Right, yeah. I don't think that Messi and Higuain and Agüero, I heard an interview with Higuain, who I think is the only one who spoke publicly about it. He's the starting center forward for Argentina. And he was like, it was the only thing we could do. I mean, we have to like, we can't like have this distraction and this like, this, you know,
right.
this thing weighing over our heads before the World Cup. Like, we need to, like, chill. You know?
So what are they doing? They're not doing it?
They're just not doing it friendly.
Yeah.
They just canceled it. Although, the funny thing is now there's a bit of a tiff because Israel had already paid for the friendly.
Thanks, Israel. Way to shatter the stereotypes of my
right.
people, of Jews.
And they're like,
being,
now we want our money back.
Right.
And the Argentines, who also, if you want to, they're like,
oh, do they?
They're like
they,
what money? Right. I don't know, where'd it go?
Yeah. Sure.
No, they are. They're like all the you know, because like Argentine soccer is like unbelievably corrupt.
Right.
And so I think like the what people are joking around is that like you know all the executives have already pocketed it.
Right.
They've already spent it.
Right. Well, Netanyahu is pretty so corrupt, so he'll understand that.
Right.
He should be able to relate to that.
Yeah.
So they were getting death threats.
Yeah.
From angry supporters of critics of Israel, supporters yeah. of the Palestinian cause. Not representative. It's always
no.
the loud, you know, always yeah. the extremists who get all the attention. Most people who are pro-Palestine, totally peaceful.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's important to know. But I mean, in any sort of, whenever there's a big online
course.
Campaign, you will get some
right.
sort of, you know.
Right. And it's not like they have armies to actually shoot people, you know.
Right.
Pick people off with sharpshooters, right. so don't worry.
Yeah.
Israel still has the leg right. up on that issue, the Israeli government. And speaking of deaths, threats. This is kind of unrelated, but I learned, and I was so shocked by this, that there was a Colombian soccer player
yeah.
who did a self goal.
Yes, and an own goal.
An own goal, that's yeah. what it's called, and was killed.
Yeah. Against the United States. In the United States. That's where he did. It was in the World Cup in 94. Andres Escobar. It's a very famous story. He was killed right after the World Cup.
What was it? Mafia? Like a... Narcos
yeah,
or mafia
I mean,
hit?
Yeah,
or?
There's actually a great documentary about it called, you should watch it, it's called The Two Escobars. It's an ESPN 30 for 30. Yeah, I mean, that's the implication that it was, they were not happy.
Poor guy, that's
yeah.
so awful. Like he already had to live with that national shame and then
yeah,
he gets killed?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
The stakes are high in the World Cup.
Right. So how popular is the World Cup in the United States?
Super popular, I mean, The World Cup that was held in the United States is still, to this day, I'm pretty sure it's still the most well-attended World Cup in history. So more people went to the stadiums than in any World
Where
Cup
was
in
that?
History, in the United States.
Where was it, though?
All over the place. Like Washington, Chicago, Dallas, L.A.,
So when they're
Orlando.
Held in a country, they're in multiple cities.
Yes, it's not like
okay, guys,
it's
just
not like
explain
the Olympics.
That to you.
It's like Beijing or something.
Right.
It's like the country hosts it. Which is kind of a funny thing when this year in Russia, because like there's all these cities that like no one's ever heard of,
right?
And that people have to go to, and like some of them are like very strange. Like there's one city that's like basically like the near gulag. It was like the near gulag that they like. It was like
the gulag wannabe.
No. It was like
Aspiring
the kind of like
gulag.
The. It was kind of like the close by the gulag that was like closer to Moscow.
Okay.
Like they, if they
the
could,
less,
if
like
they
the
were
going
to send you to Siberia,
right.
They're going to send you to like the close one.
Right.
You know, if they want.
This is Stalin times we're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah. And there's like that's one of the World Cup cities.
Nice.
And there's, you know, there's other cities like in the Ural Mountains where like these people like have to like, now they're maybe, I don't know, I think Mexico is playing there and there might be like 20,000 Mexicans coming. These people have never seen anything like that.
Right.
So that's kind of a funny subplot in this World Cup. I mean, people in Moscow and St.
Petersburg.
Gulag
tourism?
Yeah, gulag tourism, you know, yeah. But yeah, the World Cup is very popular in the United States. I mean, every year the viewership increases. I mean, it's still like a huge property for whoever broadcasts it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the amount of money that this year it's NBC and Telemundo have the rights to the World Cup. And NBC and Telemundo have the Spanish rights and Fox Sports has the English rights. And they paid like an unbelievable amount of money for it. So yeah, I mean it's a big deal. I mean, unfortunately for us that live in the United States failed to qualify this.
Why? What determines that?
They do a qualifying campaign. Like you play against the people in your region. You know, so like Europe teams play against each other to see which ones qualify for the World Cup. North America, Central America, they play together. South America, and the United States, which you know the two best teams in the United States region are Mexico and the United States, and they qualify pretty much every year. This year, the United States really dropped the ball. They lost to Trinidad and Tobago on the last day.
Go Trinidad
yeah.
and Tobago.
And both of them are lovely. I've been to both.
Poor Tobago. It really gets the short end
Tobago's
of the stick.
Way
it's never
cooler
mentioned.
Than Trinidad.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Trinidad's where the big city is,
right.
where Port-au-Prince is, and that's like where like everything is. But like Tobago is just the most beautiful place.
We should just start calling it Tobago and Trinidad.
Trinidad yeah.
Because they just never, they're like
yeah.
an add-on. Another, so I'm someone who doesn't really follow sports that much, but
yes.
The things that I've heard of most are actually something like stadia,
yeah.
like in Chile, right?
Yeah.
In Santiago, where there's that famous stadium where people were rounded up under Pinochet, who came to power in 1973, you know, and
actually,
CIA-backed
a great story about that. So
against Allende.
So right after that happened, so Allende was deposed in 1973, as you know.
CIA supported coup. He killed himself, but he was going to be killed.
Right.
He's a right-wing authoritarian, neoliberal-friendly. What's it? Milton Friedman fan.
Chicago Boys.
Chicago Boys. Government dictator that came into power, backed by the United States. Allende was the only Marxist or the first Marxist elected president. Mm-hmm. Is that, yeah. So back to you, Nando.
So there was a game scheduled shortly after that between Chile and the Soviet Union to be played in that stadium. And the Soviet Union protested and they said, we don't want to play in that stadium.
Because it was literally, I mean,
it was literally weeks
stained,
after,
right?
It was like 2 weeks after they had rounded up all these people
and killed them and tortured them,
tortured them and all that stuff.
Including Victor Jara, the very good folk singer.
There you go, Victor Jara. So the Soviet Union was like, we don't want to play there.
Yeah.
They protested, like, we'll play in literally any other stadium in Chile than.
Oh, so they weren't even going to cut off. It wasn't just about Pinochet. No. It was just this was too much.
Right.
Like to have this it in a concentration camp, basically.
Exactly. It's like, yeah. And Chile refused. Pinochet refused to move the game from to a different stadium, and so the Soviet Union says we're not playing there. And so they appealed to FIFA, and they're like, don't make us play here.
FIFA is the
governing body that governs all of soccer, world soccer, and FIFA sided with the Chileans, and so the Soviet Union didn't show up for the game, and Chile actually played the game. It's crazy if you watch the footage. It's like the Chilean players are standing there listening to the national anthem in full uniform. No one is standing next to them. They kick the ball off and they play. I swear to God, the camera guys, I can't believe it. They play this game and they're just like running around the field. They're scoring a bunch of goals. There's no one else on the field. Footage is on YouTube. Look it up. But because the Soviet Union did that, they were banned from the 1974 World Cup. They didn't play.
Because they broke the rules?
Like, because they refused to show up for a game.
And FIFA was like, no, you must play in the death stadium?
Yeah. And then the Soviet Union wasn't allowed to play the 1974 World Cup because of that.
Have they like apologized, FIFA or anything? Have they had
no.
to? They should.
FIFA? They're the most comically corrupt
but that's so, organization. But it's such bad. Like, I'm surprised they don't, like...
Well, the story is not that well. Like, I mean, the story is not that well known outside of... Because it's the Soviet Union, you know? Like, we don't, you know, we get... You know,
right.
Good acts from the Soviet Union get suppressed in this.
Right, and of course we were allies
with Chile.
Yeah. Nixon liked him. Kissinger loved him.
We hate also Kissinger.
Also friend of the show. He sounds just like the guy from Office Space. You know, the guy.
Milton.
That guy.
Yeah.
Because I told Bill that if they move my desk one more time, then I'm going to quit. And I told Dom too because
it's not acceptable.
Who determines what city or what country the World Cup is held in?
FIFA.
FIFA does, okay.
So there's this really shady process. FIFA basically, in theory, it's like an open process in which a country, you know, prepares a presentation and they like say, like, this is what we got all this great stuff. And, you know, and then they present to the FIFA Executive Committee and then the FIFA Executive Committee votes and they give the World Cup to whoever has the most votes. However, what really happens is that basically, it's just a bribery system. And it's like, it's almost, they barely conceal it. You know, they barely even bother to conceal it. Like, you know, there was a lot of speculation that South Korea paid a lot of money to get the World Cup in 2002. You know, the fact that Russia and Qatar got the World Cup at the same year, in the same year. Like, usually they stagger it. Like, they announce for the next one just before, you know what I mean?
Right, and, but they announced it at
the same time because all the members of the FIFA Executive Committee were so old that they know they weren't going to be able to be around to give the rights to the 22 World Cup. So they just, like, moved it ahead, gave away those rights, got all the money from Qatar. This is all allegedly, right? There's not a lot of hard evidence. But... Right. It seems pretty clear that all these things went down. And in fact, many of the FIFA executives went to like are being indicted by the FBI.
Really?
A lot of them are awaiting trial. There was like a huge crackdown in 2015, something I never thought I'd see. The FBI actually, you know, did a pretty decent thing.
Huh.
We don't usually say that a lot
right
here.
Yeah. Wow. And so speaking of the FBI, how did Russia get picked? When did they determine this? When did they choose the...
So I guess they must have picked it in 2000... In 12, okay. Maybe, or maybe 2000, maybe 2011. I don't remember exactly when it was. But yeah, I mean, you know, Putin probably greased a few hands and got the World Cup, you know?
Are the Russians good at soccer?
No. They used to be quite good. When they were the Soviet Union, they were quite good.
See? Another perk.
Yeah. But soccer Communism. Is not... Russia is not like a soccer-mad country the way right. others. I mean, they're very good at hockey.
There's a lot of ice.
There is a lot of ice. And soccer is not like their main
right.
thing.
What determines that? Is that like maybe there's no theory on that? But like, why is it relatively? I mean, obviously it's big here, but it has nothing compared to baseball, basketball, football, right?
Right. In general, countries play the sports of their former colonial masters in a way. Oh. So like that's why like India is so good at right. cricket. And like Australia, New Zealand, and South Africa are great at rugby. Mm. These are very British sports. But America sort of had the United States had the War for Independence.
Thomas Jefferson
early.
Was playing football.
Yeah, but it was early. Touchdowns. It was early. It was before like sports had become this like mass thing in England.
Right.
So that's why we play kind of like a bastardized version of the British sports. We play like a bastardized version of rugby, which is football. Oh. We play a bastardized version of cricket, which is baseball.
Did not know
right.
That. That's cool.
That's like a there's like a loose
basketball.
Basketball is like a new sport that was invented by a guy named Dr. James Naismith.
When? Like what decade?
I don't know the exact date, but I think it was like around 1900. It's like a relatively new sport. And it was invented by an American guy.
I didn't even think of that. Like two hoops, ball.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's weird.
Yeah.
Go James.
And soccer was invented by the British too.
Do we know when, more or less?
Well, it's unclear exactly because they started playing it in the schools, like in the prep schools for boys, so to speak, and it was kind of an organic-ish thing. And I think it was around, I think it was like 1860 something, where like they got together, like all the schools got together and sort of codified the rules, like as the official rules.
Right.
So by then, America had long been emancipated, quote unquote, from the British. So that's why like, you know, we never kind of got that here. And the reason why like a lot of the soccer clubs in, for example, like Argentina have English names, like the most famous soccer club in Argentina, or one of the most famous, is called River Plate. Mm.
River Plate.
Or say River Plate. You know, like, but they're all English names. Like Messi's right. team where he grew up, in the neighborhood where he grew up, is called Newell's Old Boys.
Oh, that must be hard for them to say. Yeah, it's a little hard.
Suincha Newell's, you know, like that's how they say it. And a lot, that's why like soccer, because they were athletic clubs formed by basically British businessmen who were in these countries, you know, doing, you know, that they were sent there to basically extract resources, right? A very famous team in Spain is called Athletic Club de Bilbao. The Athletic Club of Bilbao,
right.
Which was, you know, basically British mining executives that had been sent over to mine the minefields in Bilbao, in northern
right.
Spain, in the Basque Country. So they would be there, these families, they would just like send their entire families, and they'd form these athletic clubs.
You mean the executives, the high-ups, or the people who worked for
them? Everything, because they would send like everyone, you
right.
know, like, and they basically become like, they became like neighborhood sports clubs. And then that's how they evolved into the teams today.
So what's the difference between a club and a team? Because we don't have clubs here, right?
No, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, they're basically the same thing these days, but many what we call teams, like in Europe, they're called clubs, are proper like sports clubs. Like Barcelona has like a bunch of sports. Like they have like a hockey team and a basketball team and field hockey team,
okay.
and they have so they
all under one club.
Yeah,
got it.
Yeah,
and in terms of though the difference between the team here and the clubs there, I mean there is a real like political division
yeah.
in Europe. I mean I know about in Spain a little bit more than other countries, but I think it's kind of across the board.
Yeah,
where there are certain teams that are more working class and more left wing, then there are certain teams that are more right wing. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean because a lot of these clubs were very much identified with the neighborhoods that they were in, you know, and often there were multiple teams in the same city or multiple clubs in the same city competing against each other, and they would sort of adopt the identity of whatever the supporters of that club were. So, for example, in Italy, there's a very famous club in Rome called Lazio, and that club is sort of like very identified with like fascism. Mm. You know, like a lot of their, you know, one of their most famous players ever was this guy named Paolo Di Canio, and he would score goals and do the fascist salute.
Really what would be player. Really cool is if he did at the same time, but that requires a lot of right, core right, strength. Right. When was this?
This was in the 90s.
Wow.
Yeah. But I heard a very funny parody on a Sara podcast of Springtime for Hitler. And it was
Springtime
for Di Canio.
Right.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
I vaguely remember that. Wow. Yeah. And he doesn't get in trouble for that because free speech?
He did get in trouble, yeah.
Oh, because like Nazism is kind of, fascism is illegal or symbols of
it. But his fans loved it, you know, like the supporters loved him, you know. So that happens a lot.
And is that a working class fascist team or is it kind of a bougie fascist team? Well, because in Europe there is.
Well, yeah, I mean fascism. So, we can get into like fascism in Italy is a complex.
Right. Mussolini started as a socialist.
Yes,
by the way,
he did.
Named after, you know, he's named after Benito Mussolini.
Benito Juarez.
After,
yeah,
the Mexican.
And like his first major reform was like universal suffrage and education. But
Mussolini's?
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah. In the very famous case is in Madrid, where Real Madrid, which is my team, coincidentally, because of my family.
Right, we're going to talk about your Spanish stock.
It was very aligned with the fascist regime throughout the, especially in the second half of Franco's dictatorship in Spain.
Which was 39 to 75.
Right. So starting around the 1950s, Franco sort of took a lot more interest in soccer and used it basically as like, you know, which is a thing that dictators often use is to use sports like to
PR.
Flex their sports muscle for PR purposes. And he really supported Madrid and helped them become the powerhouse that they are today. So. Okay,
there you go. So Real Madrid is one team.
Yeah.
I mean, one club.
Yeah, and then there's another club called Atlético de Madrid, which was like the more working class team. And then there's other teams in Madrid, like...
And they're social, like are the working class team, are they aligned with and associated with the...
They're more
under Franco,
although
you couldn't do that.
Yes,
right?
Although it's gotten a little bit muddled in recent years. The sort of ultra fans...
Because of gentrification or something?
No, just because of like the nature of Spanish politics, but like the nature of sort of nationalism in Spain has really... the nationalist question in Spain has really sort of curbed the working class's left-wing militancy because they become very anti-Catalan, they become very pro-Spain,
which...
then turns them into sort of
so
a lot of the radical ultras in the Atlético Madrid supporter sections are like pretty right wing.
Interesting. On many issues or just on the autonomy issue?
Well, I mean,
it tends to
that's the thing. Like it's like, you know, for example, like if you become like a right winger here because of abortion or something, because you're liable to then become like a hyper militarist or.
It's a gateway issue
because of just the way partisan politics work.
And there are like fights on the streets, right? Like over this?
Sometimes.
I mean, do people, because they wear team, not among players, but among their fans?
Yeah, and what they have is like, what they're called, like, they usually call them ultra fans, which are these little clubs within the club. I mean, they're extra official. They're not part of the formal structure of the club, although they often collaborate. But that are quite valiant. Yeah, I mean the Madrid ones are very famous. They're called the Ultra Sur because they used to sit. They've been banned since for a few years. But I remember going to games and seeing them. They would sit in the southern end of the stadium, and they barely watched the game. They would just like be there singing songs and like doing all kinds of like neo-Nazi propaganda and stuff like that. And
singing Cara al Sol or anything?
Yeah, not so much Cara al Sol. They're neo-Nazis. It's different.
They're more, right.
Yeah,
that's old school.
It's different than like the traditional...
Right.
Like fascism in Spain is very much traditional Catholic.
Right. And then part of the reason it's so hard to define fascism is because it's so anti-ideological and anti-intellectual.
In a way,
so it doesn't have... There's no communist manifesto for fascism. It means fasci is like sticks.
Yeah.
Like...
That's the sign. Yeah.
Right.
And then even like, the most famous team in Serbia, one of the most famous teams in Serbia is called Partizan Belgrade, which comes from the sort of partisan groups. You know the partisans, the anti-fascist partisans.
Yeah.
Partisan militias.
Uncle, who was part of that
there
in Lithuania, and He killed the Nazis who killed his parents.
Oh, nice.
And he was killed. Apparently there's a monument to him. I gotta go there, but yeah.
You should.
Partisans, yeah.
Yeah, so the partisans, which, you know, as you know, like in Spain and right. in Italy and
anti-Nazi,
Slovenia
anti-fascist,
and Yugoslavia,
yeah.
they were basically like these. And that's why this club is called Partisan Belgrade.
Nothing but blood inscribed is bitter song we sing. Tis not a caroling of birds upon the wing, but twas a people amidst the crashing fires of hell that sang this song and fought courageous till it fell. But twas a people.
So yeah, so these clubs are formed in a sort of social context, and they largely often maintain them, although not always.
Where can you find the podcast?
Well, you just search We Came to Win wherever you get your podcasts, on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, right. or I don't know. There's all kinds of apps these days to listen to podcasts. So if you search We Came to Win, you'll find it. I think you guys will like it.
Well, thanks so much, Nanda, for coming on.
Thank you so much, Katie.
And make sure you join our Patreon, where you can find an extended interview that I do with Nanda Villa. We talk about some really interesting things, including the Catalan independence movement and my dating a Spanish soccer player.
Very exciting.
Very exciting. I actually wound up dating a Spanish soccer player.
Oh, my goodness.
Who kept it a secret. It was like kind of like coming to America. Like, he didn't want me to know who he was because
right,
he wanted
right,
me
right.
like fall in love with him for
who he was.
Except not fall in love, just go out yeah. on some dates.
You can find The Katie Halper Show every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on WBAI, that's 99.5 FM, WBAI.org. You can find us on SoundCloud. You can find us on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. Again, that's patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. You can find us on Twitter using the hashtag KTHelpShow. That's letter K, letter T, H-A-L-P-S-H-O-W. You can find me at KTHelps, letter K, letter T, H-A-L-P-S. And you can find Gabe at Gabe_Pacheco.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.